It's good to be back with you this evening. Appreciate your being here. Appreciate those of you who from the local congregation here have supported the meeting so well, and appreciate those of you who are visiting. We're glad that you've come our way, and certainly invite you back if you can come for either or both of the final services of the meeting tomorrow and Friday evening. This evening, we're going to talk on, I decided to stay with it, we're going to talk about religious leftovers, and it's just a simple, basic lesson that's designed to kind of, I think, if nothing else, just remind us of what God expects of us. And I hope that we'll find it interesting. When I was in the sixth grade, we had a student teacher come in and do her student teaching in the little classroom. We had the fourth, fifth, and sixth grade in one room where I grew up. And she did her student teaching there, and she said something one day that I've never forgotten. Now, sixth grade is a long ways back for me. In fact, that's more than I'm going to tell you. I don't want you to know. But at any rate, she was talking to us about getting our message across as simply as we can. And she said this, and I've never forgotten it. She said, we could get up in front of a group of people and go, propel, propel, propel your craft swiftly down the liquid solution, ecstatically, 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 ecstatically. Existence is but an illusion. But she said, isn't it a whole lot better to just say, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, merrily, 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 life is but a dream. I think one of the highlighting notes of a preacher's ability is if they can make a lesson simple enough that anyone that listens to it can understand it. And that's what I try to do. And I don't try to get deep, I don't try to get fancy, because I don't have much deep or fancy in me. But I do love the Word, and I think that the Word is presented simply, and for the most part at least, and that's how we need to approach it. And so I hope that this lesson will be easy for you to follow and will, I guess, if nothing else, just remind us of what God wants from us, as was mentioned in the prayer just a couple of moments ago. In the 44th chapter of Isaiah, there's kind of an interesting little story told about a man who cut down a tree. When he cut down the tree, it says he took some of it to burn for firewood. He took some of it to use to heat his meal. And he took what was left to make a god out of. So he was warm, he had something to eat that was warm, and he could pray to a stump. And Isaiah told that story to kind of represent how ridiculous idolatry was and why God was so offended by it. When they could have worshipped the true and the living God, they chose sometimes to worship a hunk of wood. A little later in that same chapter, Isaiah says about that same man, he fed on ashes. What he ate was of no real benefit to him. How he worshiped was of no real benefit to him, because he was doing it the wrong way to the wrong thing. Don't let yourself feed on ashes religiously. But to me, the thing that stands out about it is that even in idolatry, oftentimes God just got the leftovers. God got what the person who was offering it to him didn't need. He fed on ashes, but he gave God leftovers. God does not want us to be people who feed him or provide for him religious leftovers. There are several different areas where we have to be careful about that. We need to be careful about that in regard to our loyalty. We can be loyal to a variety of things. We can be loyal to family. We can be loyal to job. We can be loyal to civic organizations. We can be loyal to our favorite teams. We can be loyal to our high school that we're alumni from. We can be loyal to our favorite TV program. We can be loyal to so many things that if we aren't careful, guess who we fail to be loyal to? I love the West Virginia Mountaineers. I grew up 32 miles from Morgantown. I bleed blue and gold. If you cut me, I'd bleed blue and gold. Now, where I've lived for the better part of the last 20 years, you have to be careful what blue and gold you bleed, because, you know, we don't have very many people over there that'll let you live long if you're from Michigan. But once they know that that's West Virginia, they'll at least allow that without beating you up or anything. But I love the Mountaineers. And I guess my fondest wish would be that some fall before I die, they win the national championship in basketball and or football. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'd be tickled to death if it did happen. But I can tell you something. I'm not going to miss church services to watch the Mountaineers play, even if it was a national championship game. I'm not more loyal to West Virginia University than I am to my Lord. I served on a board in Morgan County for several years that provided housing for people with a variety of different disabilities. We worked hard on that. We bought houses, had them renovated, and got people staying in them to supervise the ones who would reside there. We worked hard. There was a group of about seven or eight of us on the board, and I was loyal to that board as long as I was on it. I tried to be there for every meeting I could be there for. But if their meeting conflicted with church, I went to church. I grew up in a home where we didn't have to ask where we were going to be Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesday evening. We knew where we were going to be. We knew we were going to be at church. When I would play football in the fall, guess what the first thing I had to tell the coach was? On Wednesday nights, coach, I have to leave at 7 o'clock because church starts at 7:30. That's just the way we were raised. We were raised in a home of believers who were convicted to serve God and to serve Him first. It's easy to deny that maybe we push God down on our priority list. But take a look at your checkbook. Take a look at your appointment book. Take a look at the decisions you've made over the last few years. Be honest about them. Where does God rank in the midst of those checks that were written, those decisions that were made, those priorities that were set? I suspect that by the time this pandemic has run its course and we are back to as normal as we're going to be, that most congregations are going to lose at least 20% of their membership. We may get some of those back if we really keep after them. But I suspect if a congregation went into this pandemic with 100 members, they'll come out with 80 or so. And it won't be due to death. It'll be due to giving God the leftovers of loyalty. You see, when you start missing church, whatever the reason, and it may be a legitimate reason to be gone, but when you start missing church, you fill that time with something else. And it's very hard sometimes for us to empty that out of our lives to get back to church when we could. We have to be careful that we don't offer God what's left of our loyalty, that everything else we are involved in gets the best we've got to give, and God gets the leftovers. I would also remind you that some give God what's left over of their time. Now, time is a precious thing. Poor Richard's almanac once said, "Time is the stuff life is made of." One man wrote, in light of time, that time is second only to the soul in preciousness, because it is time that limits how long we have to get our souls right. Time is valuable. Paul said in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 and 16, "Walk circumspectly," that means wisely, "not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time." Some newer translations render that, "making good use of our time." We all make use of our time. The question is, how do we who are Christians make use of our time? Where does God fit in to the time that we are willing to devote? Too often we are content to give God only a few stolen minutes here or there. And that's stolen from other things sometimes that we would rather be doing than serving God. We only get so much time. I've joked a little bit this week about my Monday. You know, I retired almost 3 years ago. And if I'd have known retirement was this much fun, I think I would have done it sooner. But I retired about 3 years ago. Now, let me tell you what Monday was like. I got up at about 5 till 6, drove to Moundsville, West Virginia, and spoke in chapel at West Virginia School of Preaching. Immediately after chapel, I drove to Zanesville, Ohio, went directly to my office, sat down, wrote a bulletin article, and outlined Sunday morning's Bible class, then went with another member of the church to one of the rest homes or care centers there in Zanesville to find out where the Bible class I taught yesterday at 11 o'clock was going to be, so I'd know where to go to. I left from there to go back to the office, finish outlining my Bible class, and then I drove to McConnellsville to rest for a few minutes and get changed and ready to come over here. So then I drove to Cambridge, and after church, I drove back to McConnellsville. Isn't retirement fun? And you know something? I didn't resent a single second of that. Virtually everything I did that day brought some, or at least had the potential to bring some degree of glory to God. We as Christians need to look at our time in terms of how precious it is, how little of it we have, and how we can make the most of it. I'm not asking us to be fanatics who ignore family and ignore work and ignore a host of other things. I'm just asking us to be Christians, to seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, to give Him not the leftovers of our time, but the choicest parts of them. And you can't do a sermon like this unless you mention this third thought. Some give God what is left of their money. Several area preachers and I have talked about this. It's been kind of interesting how the pandemic has affected the church in terms of its finances. For the most part, in this general area, and I want to commend you for it, in this general area, McConnellsville, Beverly, Zanesville, Cambridge, contributions have stayed fairly constant. At 7th Street, several members mailed in their money for weeks for the contribution. Others would come and drop it off into the mailbox at the church building. They didn't have to preach to them about it. The contribution hardly changed. If anything, it went up. Norville Park right now is running over budget in the middle of this pandemic. And they don't go around and pick up the money. They just have two boxes in the back and let people put in what they want to put in on their way back. God bless them. But I talked to my younger daughter today, and the congregation she attends in another state has had to let their secretary go and are frightened that they won't be able, if things don't turn around pretty quickly, to keep their minister. People have failed to stay current with their giving, and their budget of about $3,000 a week is falling anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500 a week below that. I understand that if the pandemic has affected our prosperity, I don't understand that if we're just thinking something along the lines of, well, if I'm not there, I'm not going to give. Where did we ever get the idea we give to the church? We don't give to the church. We give to God. We give to the Lord. And the church is just a steward of those things. If God's let you down, that might affect your giving. But if God hasn't let you down, then why can't you give? If you have to mail it in, mail it in. If you drop it off, drop it off. If you put it in a box on your way out, put it in a box on the way out. But don't give God the leftovers. And don't give with ulterior motives. I read one time about a congregation that was getting ready to build a brand new worship annex on their existing facility. And to help raise the money to do it, they put a plea out to the congregation for people to donate money. And as kind of a promotion sort of thing, they told the congregation that whoever donated the most money toward the new annex would get to choose the first three hymns after the annex was opened and they were able to worship. Well, one old widow lady gave something between $10,000 and $20,000. I mean, she just blew everybody else out the window with it. And so the first day of the first Lord's Day they met, the preacher got up and talked about how the widow Smith or whatever her name was, you know, gave so generously. And he said, and now for your reward, you can choose the first three hymns. And she turned and looked over the audience and said, I'll take him and him and him. Well, she gave pretty good, but she gave with ulterior motives. God said, just give according to your prosperity. As God has prospered, you give. If you're making more, give more. If you're making less, cut back if you have to. If it's a time in your life when there are a lot more expenses, like children in college or, you know, medical bills and things, you may have to cut back. Your prosperity may not be as great. But if you're in good shape, show it in your giving. That's what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. Give according to your prosperity. In 2 Corinthians, he talks a lot more about giving, especially in chapters 8 and 9, and he reminds us that we ought to give as we purpose in our hearts. That just simply means that we think ahead, that we plan our giving. You know, I've gone to the church all of my life, and so I've not always been a preacher. I was a ratty, snotty little kid running around the building every once in a while, you know. But I saw funny things during the giving before. We had one man who was probably the richest man in our little hometown. And I'm not kidding you, in his pocket on Sunday morning, he had a wad of bills as big as my fist, John, and maybe even bigger. And every time the plate was passed, he had two rubber bands around it. He'd snap them off. I can still hear him snapping it. He'd fold them out or let them flatten out in his hand, and he'd dig down through the hundreds and the 50s and the 20s and the 10s and the 5s, and he'd pull out three $1 bills and put in the plate. One day, the treasurer asked him why he did that, and he said, well, one of them's for me, and two of them are for my dear departed wife. I'll never get over what the treasurer said. I heard this through about 11-year-old ears. He says, would to God you'd have been married several times. happens. Think ahead. Purpose your giving in light of your prosperity. I've seen so many people, it would be funny if it weren't so sad. When the plate's being passed, getting their wallet out and searching in there to see if there's anything left to give to the Lord. We ought to be ashamed of ourselves to offer God the leftovers of a prosperity he provided us to begin with. He doesn't want second best. He doesn't want us putting first place ribbons on second place things. He wants us to give him the best we have to give. He doesn't expect us to give the best there is to be given. We may not be able to afford that. Our prosperity may not reach that point. But he does want us to give the best we can afford to give. Don't give God the leftovers of your finances. And some give God what's left of their energy and their ability. In the 25th chapter of Matthew, Jesus told a series of parables. Probably the one best known is the parable of the talents. And in the parable of the talents, a master calls three servants into his presence. He gives each of them a certain amount of money. And he tells them, now I want you to take the money I've given you, and I want you to go out and make more. I want you to use what I've given you, put your energy and your imagination to it, and go out and increase my money. And the key to this is, he gave to every man according to his ability. In other words, he gave one man five talents, which is a sum of money. By the way, a fairly large sum of money. And he gave him five talents because he had the ability to use five talents. And the Lord knew that. He gave a second man two talents, again, an amount of money, smaller, but still a substantial amount, because he knew he had the ability to use two talents, to invest it, to use it, and to make a return for his master. And he called the third servant and gave him one talent. He didn't give him one talent because he thought he was worse than the other two. He just didn't have the same level of ability the other two had. So he gave him what he had the ability to work with, and that was one talent. Still a fair sum of money if you're talking Roman talent. I think that ran into the thousands of dollars by today's reckoning. And he leaves. And these men now are responsible to use their energy and to use their ability to go out and get increase from their Lord's money. And the five-talent man goes out and does five-talent work. He invests his energy and his time and his ability, and when the Lord comes back and calls him into account, he gives him 10 talents. And the Lord said, "You're a good and faithful servant." And while the Lord was gone, the two-talent man went out and he worked hard and he invested his time and utilized his ability and doubled his money. And when called in to give account, presented to his Lord 4 talents. And the Lord said, "You're a good and faithful servant." The one-talent man came before the Lord to give an account, and he handed him 1 talent. And the Lord said, "Wait a minute, didn't I give you 1 talent? Well, this is Bartrug paraphrase, but it's there. You could read it if you want to. "Didn't I give you 1 talent? Why haven't you given me back more?" Oh, he said, "Lord, I know how you are. You're kind of mean and a little bit nasty sometimes, and I was afraid, and so I just went out and buried your money. And now here it is back." Now, he didn't lose a thing, except the opportunity to commit his ability and energy to God. God wasn't mad at him because he only had 1 talent. He was mad at him because he didn't use his ability with that talent. It's the same way for us. We don't all have the same abilities. We don't all have the same assets. But God does know what He did give us the ability to do. He does know what He entrusted us with to utilize to His glory. And He expects us to give Him the energy and ability it takes to use that properly. Don't give Him leftovers of your energy and your ability. He deserves better than that. Name one time that God ever gave anybody a leftover. Name one time when God ever blessed you with something second rate. He has always given the best He's got to give. And He doesn't want us to be like that man in Isaiah 44 who would even rob a God of his own making by giving Him leftovers. And there are some who give God what is left of their lives. In a sense, that's admirable. The oldest person I've ever baptized was 87 years old. He lived a couple or 3 years after his baptism and was a faithful Christian. Probably next to him was an older man from the Woodsfield area that I baptized who was 85, I think. He lived for several years after he became a Christian, and he lived a very faithful Christian life in that time frame. But you know what both of them said to me? That they hated that they had waited so long. The one at Woodsfield especially, he did everything within his ability to help the church. And he would be out there with young people teaching them how to fish. He'd be helping when there was some carpentry work or repair work to be done. He was a hero, a good role model. He made up his mind that with what little time he knew he would have left, he was going to give God the best he had to give. And his only regret was he waited so long. So when I say some give God the leftovers of their lives, I'm not speaking bad of those who don't obey the gospel till later life. God bless them for having the courage and humility to do it even then. And God be blessed for giving them the time to get around to it. But today I'm talking to you. God doesn't want you to say, I'll be too busy in my teens with sports and studies to be a Christian. And then in your 20s and 30s say, well, boy, this job is just really wearing me out, and my wife wants this, my husband wants that, the kids need that. I'll get around to it later. And then in the 40s and 50s, well, my job's a lot more responsible now, and there's a lot more expected of me. When are you going to get around to serving God? When's He going to get the best of your time instead of the leftover of your time? I can't answer that question, but you can, and you need to. We need to get into the practice of almost without thinking, giving God the best we have to give. Whether it's our loyalty and commitment, our time, our money, our energy and ability, or even our life. We need to get into the habit of giving God the best we've got. Because if we don't, in some ways, we are acting as foolishly as that man who cut that tree down. Built a fire to warm himself, cooked a roast on it, and then used a stump to pray to God. And it was all that he'd used up everything he wanted. So he just used what he didn't want for God. A religion that tries to satisfy God with the crumbs that fall from life's table is as absurd as a religion that centers on the stump of a tree. God demands your best. Whatever your best is, God demands it. Are you giving it to Him? Can he look at you and smile and say, you're a good and faithful servant? If you're here tonight and you are not yet a Christian, don't wait any longer. I don't know how much longer you'll live. It may be a few days. It may be a few years. It may be a long time. You may die before you get home tonight. I'm not being morbid. I'm just being realistic. Don't rob God of what time you have left. If you need to be baptized into Christ, why not now? If you need us to pray with you about your spiritual priorities and choices, why not tonight? John's going to be at the front. We're going to sing a song of encouragement. We're hopeful, prayerful, that if you need to come forward to give God your best, that tonight will be the night you do it while we stand and while we sing.